Since iTunes only keeps the last 100 episodes of any show, some of our show topics that seem to help the most people are no longer available when people search on iTunes. So, in an effort to make that information available to more people, from time to time we're going to re-air some of our most popular show topics. You can also go to kickitnaturally.com and search for any topic in our search box. For now, enjoy this show that originally aired in 2014.
T.C. Hill is not a doctor and does not claim to be a doctor licensed in any type of medical field. Don't be an idiot and use anything heard on the show as medical advice. This information should be used for educational purposes only, and you should contact your doctor for any medical advice. Now get off me. Welcome to Kick It Naturally. I'm Kenna McEnroe, and I'm here with T.C. Hill, author, natural health expert, producer.
And surrounded by perfectionists.
Surrounded by perfectionists.
We're such perfectionists here that we've already done this episode once. And we were like, that was pretty good.
Well, let's
and we
do
were
it
like,
again.
No, let's do it again.
We
let's
strive
make it better.
For the best
I
here.
I think we can make that better. So we scrap the whole thing. We're going to start all over. And we're going to do part two of Candida. Just because we want to make it perfect.
We're either perfectionists or we're sadists. I can't figure out which one.
Or our recording just broke and it didn't work.
That's
and
true.
We thought it worked, but it did not. And it lacked of work. So we had a technical difficulty in our new studio. We think that maybe termites messed it up or something. It was probably termites.
Maybe.
So we set up even a backup recorder now. The only thing is that this backup recorder also translates to Spanish.
If our
original recording ever goes down, you guys may just hear like a Spanish episode.
Don't even say that. Can you imagine transcribing in Spanish? I'm going to need you to transcribe this in Spanish, French, and Dutch. And
it'll be awesome because we're perfectionists. So this will go well. So what's going to happen is we've already done part one of the Candida episode, and we've already done part two, but we're going to try and do part two again, but we're not really going to remember like... Did we already talk about that in part one, or did we not talk about that yet? It's going to be a mess, but
it's going to be fun. A mess. We probably won't give you all the information you need. Maybe you should just stop listening now.
So train wreck, go.
That cute little laugh you hear is Mr. Hottie Patati Will Schmidt coming in from the Bay Area. What's up?
Yo, how's it going?
It's good. You remember everything you said in part two, right?
I remember a lot of it.
Right. Oh, good.
I have a very good memory, apparently.
You have a great memory.
So let's see if you do, because when we did this second part, you did like a recap of what we covered in part one. Let's see what you got.
I did. That's what I was just doing.
The rapid recap.
And you're going to wrap it now.
So in the first episode, we mainly answered questions around like what causes Candida. And we, like most issues in health, there's a lot of different potential causes. And with that, then there's also a lot of different potential solutions, because if you really want to fix something, you got to address the cause. So we dove into that a good bit in the last episode. And the main things that we highlighted were that we're all surrounded by bacteria and viruses and fungus all the time. And it's also appropriate for there to be some bacteria inside us. They're synergistic organisms that work together with us. They help us process food. They create special nutrients. They even are starting to research how our intestinal flora, which are made of bacteria primarily, contribute to our neurochemistry and our brain health and our mood. And so it should be a symbiotic relationship, and we don't want to just like kill everything out all the time. And the main question that comes up when people think about Candida is like, how do I just kill it off, as opposed to why is it overgrowth in my situation? Like why do I have an imbalance of an excessive amount of Candida that's kind of running the show, right, when other people have like a normal healthy amount? And we boiled that down to usually there's some sort of issue that's causing a net effect of like impairing immune function. Because it's not that like, oh, you got unluckily exposed to Candida.
Yeah,
like it's there all the time. It's like, what's going on in your particular system that's not properly regulating the populations? And a lot of times that has to do with impaired immune health, but which can be due to a lot of different things. There could be medications or viral infections. And there could be like a net sort of energy drain that's maybe occurring from poor digestion, or maybe digestion itself is the source of the problem, allowing bacteria to like overgrow in the situation. So we, those are some of the main things we talked about.
And one important thing that you really touched on there was that a lot of people don't understand that everybody has candida in their system pretty much. And it's not this horrible thing. And there are beneficial yeast that we want in our body. And they kind of help from the bad bacteria taking over, and the beneficial bacteria help from the pathogenic yeast taking over. So we want the whole gang in the system. We don't want to wipe out everything entirely, because there's a lot of people out there that promote that all fungus and yeast is bad and we want to kill it all. But it's all about bringing it back to balance. So we're going to get into a little bit how to do that today. But the other important thing that we covered is that you can't know that you have candida overgrowth just because you're looking at symptoms like a coating on your tongue, or you do that spit test, or you take a questionnaire that makes it sound like you might have candida. If you really want to know if you have an overgrowth and whether you need to treat that, you really need to do a test like a stool test, or a special urine acids test, or even a blood test. There's a variety of them out there. We covered them in part one. We actually recorded part one, so you can go back and listen to that. And but it's important to know, do I really have candida, or am I just trying to be like one of all the cool kids and do the kind of treatment that they're doing?
You know, maybe you could build a wall in your stomach to keep all the candida out.
That's a good idea.
I mean, you know, that's what Trump would say. So I just had to make it political.
So you would use bricks, like brownies.
Yeah, you would eat a lot of brownies.
Or something to try and build this wall.
Yeah, exactly.
It's something a solid
to build a
plan.
Wall. Yeah.
All right, so that's the end of this show. Just do that. Brownie it up. All right, so let's dig into our questions. I think we
or dive. Remember, oh, well, that was from the last show.
We can do both. We can dig or dive.
All right, so Derek from Schaumburg, Illinois. Could be due to calcium and vitamin C deficiency.
Yeah, that's totally possible, because we talked about how a lot of times there's just a problem with the immune system not functioning correctly. And in our episode on the common cold, where we really dig into the immune system a lot, we talk about how maybe someone doesn't have a calcium deficiency. Maybe they have calcium, but it's not in the right place. And when there's not enough calcium at the tissue level, there's no ability for the body to signal the immune system that, hey, we need to attack these bad pathogen guys. So the signal never gets there. And of course, vitamin C is kind of like the bullets that the body uses to take care of the bad guys. So we talk a little bit sometimes about how like things like vitamin D and eating too many carbs and things can displace calcium and shut that off.
Yeah, we do mention that. And then one of my other favorite things to point out in relation to errant calcium metabolism, which is when calcium isn't going where it should be, or it's being pulled out of where it should be and deposited where it is like the phenomena where we see calcium leaving the bones, resulting in like a weaker skeletal system, which over the long haul becomes osteoporosis. That same calcium gets pulled out of the bones and it ends up in the soft tissues, deposited in like the muscles, and specifically and very problematically, it can end up getting deposited in the mitochondria, which is like the engines of the cells, the little energy makers. They make ATP and carbon dioxide, and they're like literally like the engine of a car. That's one of the main roles of the mitochondria, and they can get clogged with calcium when they're not able to run like a normal healthy engine should. So a normal healthy engine requires proper circulation of oxygen, requires the right kind of fuel, requires like enough water and all these other regulatory things helping the fuel to get to the cell. Like that's the engine metaphor works pretty well when we look at like, all right, what's going on with when calcium or when regular cellular energy production is screwed up. Calcium can end up getting like a clog in the wheel, or like you're pouring the wrong kind of gas into the tank and there's calcium in that, and it ends up screwing up the ability of the cell to make energy, and that impairs their functionality. So immune cells, as well as muscle cells and nerve cells, will all start to swell and not be able to perform their functions as well as they would like to be able to. So that happens whenever we're exposed to something that impairs the cell's ability to make energy in the normal, healthy way that it should.
Right. And, you know, there's a variety of things that can put that calcium in the wrong place. You know, some people take vitamin D, and the mainstream tells us to take these huge doses, which is not appropriate for most people. And it causes too much calcium to be pulled out of the tissues, and then it gets deposited in these bad places. Eating too many carbs and starches can also pull too much of that calcium out of the tissue, where it can help the immune system function. So those are some very common problems, because those are two things that a huge portion of the population does. So yeah, a person can have a lack of calcium, but as equally problematic can just be calcium in the wrong place.
Yeah.
All right. Rania, yes, please. SIBO, histamine intolerance, and candida, why it happens.
So histamine intolerance is an interesting topic, and it's becoming more and more popular. And what happens is a lot of people will have a reaction to histamine, and the body makes histamine, and there are foods that contain histamine or that cause more production of histamine. And with some people, there's an overproduction of histamines or an inability to properly break down the buildup of histamines in the body. And when excess occurs, it can create these reactions where a person becomes intolerant to the histamine levels, just like a person could become resistant to insulin when insulin is high all the time. So we see this particular problem frequently with candida overgrowth. And the interesting thing here is that they say when you break down the foods that seem to be higher in histamine or create a higher histamine production, a lot of them are foods that are aged or fermented, like kefir, yogurt, cheese, sauerkraut, or sausages, and things like that that are fermented, because the fermentation creates a higher level of histamines. Now, what if a person has no digestion and all the food that they're eating, instead of being digested properly, is rotting and fermenting? We know that that happens all the time. So if that's the case, where all the food is being fermented, then anything that they eat is going to raise the fermentation and raise that histamine level. And we talked a little bit, Will mentioned in part one, how, you know, digestive issues kind of open the door to allow the candida or other bad guys to thrive. So it makes sense that we see both of these things together, right? Wolf, Wolfgang, Whiff, Wang, Schmidt?
It does.
Wolfie, Wangy, Willy?
Yeah. And another interesting thing, too, is that, and what maybe why we're starting to see food allergies and food sensitivities become such a commonplace thing. It's like super hip. It's like almost as hip as an iPhone.
Right.
You know, is that the way that our foods are grown, especially plants, are, and then the animals that feed off of those plants, they're exposed to more assailants that damage them and cause injury and stimulate the this enzyme response of chitinase, which is, I may be pronouncing that wrong, but it's basically the equivalent of a histamine in a plant. And our crops have these higher amounts of these particular enzymes that when we consume them act like histamines in the body. So it's understandable why there's a rise in this occurrence of these sort of food allergens and food sensitivities that that people are having just based off of the food that's available to us.
And what about like environmental toxins and stuff that our body just has to deal with so many more, just toxins in the environment all the time that now we may have sensitivities to food that we could have handled before, but now we can't.
Yeah, maybe a person would have been able to handle a higher level of histamine if they weren't dealing with lead poisoning or some other situation that's becoming a burden. That's a good point.
That's true. Yeah,
just like someone has like a bunch of mercury in their system, their whole system, their immune system and their endocrine system, and all sorts of issues are going to arise. And then with that, it's going to have a harder time keeping all those little critters at bay.
Mm-hmm. We're living in a toxic time, people.
Right.
Toxic.
So, someone dealing with this issue while they're working to, if they confirm that they have a candida growth, or maybe they don't, they're just having histamine issues. They could first work to improve digestion so that they're really breaking down their food and all that food is not rotting and fermenting. And you can learn how to do that in our almost free 4-week digestion course at kickitnaturally.com. It's all of 50 cents. It's very expensive to take that course.
Money back guarantee.
Yeah, money back guarantee. We will deliver your 50 cents back to you if you're not completely thrilled with this course. 30 days. Mm-hmm. After 30 days, you cannot have your 50 cents back. We need to use that 50 cents. What could we do with 50 cents? There's lots of things we could do.
Well, I could Gum. Do with 50 Cent the rapper.
Oh, yeah. You could hang out with 50 Cent. But that's an important thing. But you can also reduce some of the higher histamine foods while you're working to improve your digestion and reduce your histamine levels. And you can Google, high histamine foods or lower histamine foods, and you can find all kinds of lists that are beneficial. But they'll show you things that are higher, like alcohol. Sorry. Alcohol is higher. Always,
you hate alcohol.
I'm drunk right now.
I guess to give a little structure to this very perfectionist episode.
Why would we ever do that?
Yeah, maybe we could sort of bullet point the main kind of action steps that you would highlight for someone that, okay, we've confirmed you've got candida, you did the right stool tests or blood tests, and like, okay, you're for sure you got that. What are the things they got to do? They got to do this.
Boom. Okay, let's look at number one. Number one is there has to be an adjustment in diet, but I think we covered this in part one. Who knows? Who knows? Maybe we covered it in part two.
Ketones and all that junk.
No, we didn't get to that yet. No. But what we did cover is that food, changing your diet, is not enough to wipe out a candida overgrowth. You also need to use some antimicrobials, which we'll cover in just a minute. But when we're looking at diet, there's a popular the candida diet out there, but it doesn't seem to be that effective, and people end up doing it for years and years and not really fixing the problem because they really try to restrict all of the carbs and sugars that would be feeding these pathogenic microorganisms. So they try to remove them completely, but then they also allow grains like quinoa and things like millet and things like that. So it doesn't seem to be that effective. A lot of people will use the GAPS protocol or the specific carbohydrate diet or SCD diet. Another popular one that seems to do well is to do a low FODMAP diet, which is restricting a lot of these types of carbohydrates and other foods that are more easily become food for these critters. Basically, when you look at different types of carbs, you have monosaccharides, polysaccharides, and some of them just have one sugar molecule that are very easy to break down and get absorbed, and that's no problem. But if you look at like lactose that has two sugar molecules, it has to be split for the body to be able to use those. So if a person can't break things down properly, or maybe they don't have the lactase enzyme to break down lactose correctly, they can't be broken down properly, and they kind of hang around the gut and become food for all these pathogenic critters. So that's kind of the idea behind these diets is, okay, let's restrict the food and starve them out and kill them dead. And so this step does need to be taken with one of these approaches, but it's not going to be enough. And
you don't do it forever. You do it for a little while, and then you stop.
Right. So one thing that Will be excited about, he was when we did the first recording on this, is that I found that a lot of people were doing these super low carbohydrate diets, and I think it was Paul Jaminet who first talked about this a few years ago, that when these candida get to an overgrowth pathogenic level, they seem to thrive on ketones. And when you reduce carbs significantly, you can begin to produce an excess amount of ketones. And we've talked about this in a lot of issues and even benefits from doing this in some situations and harmful things that it can create for other people. We've talked about those a lot. But it seems that if you have a candida overgrowth, this may not be the best plan because they will thrive on the ketones while you're trying to starve them of the glucose. Be excited about that, Will Schmidt.
Right. Yeah, we hear a lot of the time people want to cut out all sugar when they have candida, And that was the advice when I first had eczema. I was given this advice: oh, cut out sugar. And I did, and it helped a little bit. It definitely did not fix it. I had to make some major overhauls to actually correct the eczema. And I never even knew about like candida. I never got any stool tests to figure out if that was the issue or not for me. But it is interesting to learn that what you pointed out of like, oh, well, some forms of like fungal and bacterial invaders actually thrive on ketones, which if you don't know what a ketone is, that's an energy substrate that your body makes when it's using fat for energy production, as opposed to using glucose, which you can get glucose from carbohydrate consumption or from protein consumption or from catabolization of your own body's proteins. You can also make glucose from
right,
that.
Right, so you don't need to eat glucose to have glucose available in the system.
Yeah. But if you're someone who's like of the mind of like, oh, I gotta cut out all sugar so that I starve out the candida, what we're really in essence saying here is, well, that may not work. That may actually feed other pathogens or the very pathogen you're trying to kill off.
It could make it worse.
Yeah, it could make it worse. And again, like when people go into that ketosis state, that requires severe carbohydrate restriction and also somewhat moderate restriction of protein if you're going to actually get into ketosis. And that has a whole different metabolic profile of what I was talking about earlier with how cells are making energy and how calcium can end up getting deposited inside the soft tissues. And we related that directly to how that can end up impairing the immune system, which is the whole thing that needs to be strong and stable to keep candida in check. So if you're going to go that route of like trying to starve it out or do a fast or something like that, that if you have this issue of candida because of an impaired immune system, just fasting might actually, in your case, make it worse. In other cases, if you were, say, eating something that was the problem, like some like high histamine food and you went on a fast and your symptoms disappeared, awesome. Like that would be a solution for you. But it really comes down to like what is causing the symptoms that you have. And it's really important not to confuse like a skin rash or a thrush with just like for sure it's candida, unless you've done the work to really confirm that that's what it is. Because sometimes a fast could work. And then you'd be like, see, or when you go on a ketogenic diet, you'd be like, oh, they were wrong. It totally worked for me. It really depends. Like, what's actually causing the problem in your case?
Right, and it depends on what level you hit that. Because we talk a lot, like in the Kick Your Fat in the Nuts book, that the program that we lean people towards can possibly be slightly ketogenic for some of the people. It won't be that way for everybody, and that can be a lot different than doing a severe ketogenic diet. Those are apples and oranges, so to speak. But if you were to reduce carbs to wipe out a candida overgrowth, which we do recommend, you just may do well to kind of stick to what we suggest in the book about still continuing things like, you know, strawberries and the kind of berries that could supply some fructose without being harder to break down and staying in the gut longer like a, you know, potatoes or French fries might. So somebody doing sweet potatoes, strawberries, things like that, it can be a beneficial thing while you're reducing your carbs but still restricting your moving into ketosis type stuff. So again, we've talked about things that people could use ketosis to benefit for, and we've also talked about other situations where they could make things worse with ketosis. But it's interesting to find this because, you know, when I was really sick, I removed every single carb, every single sugar, like all of it. And nothing improved my health as much as doing that. But that doesn't mean that that's the best thing for me to do forever, like Kenna was just saying. And Will and I have talked on shows before how we see that the ketogenic approach can be very effective for specific issues, but the people that succeed with it seem to not do as well after doing it for a few years. And it's interesting to think that maybe this is the reason. Maybe it was allowing pathogenic candida or other fungus to thrive from all the ketones.
Who knows? If somebody does a ketogenic diet for years, isn't that like kind of turning off their digestion? So when they do like eat carbs again or something like that, they're going to go berserk because their metabolism is different now because they've changed it?
Well, you're leaning your body to being better at processing one type of fuel, yeah. which we look at people that with imbalances that, oh, it can only process carbs and they can't process these other things well at all.
Proteins or fats,
or they can't process carbs at all. So you really want to find balance, but sometimes pushing somebody one direction or the other is the right move therapeutically to fix a problem, but not necessarily
for a
stay
lifetime.
That way forever.
Yeah.
And I mean, it can have effects on the cell, as far as like the apparatus that the cell use to make energy. There's some cells have a lot of mitochondria and they're kind of set up for the use of glucose for energy. And some cells are more prone towards fat, and a lot of cells are malleable that can respond to make, oh, it's like, oh, we're just getting fat now. Okay, well, we'll make more fat processing little centers. So they can get conditioned to start doing that more, and they'll sort of deconditioned to using glucose for fuel if you're on a ketogenic diet for a long time. But so that's one thing, like the cells will actually sort of respond to the demands of and the availability of certain types of fuel. But also long-term ketosis or even like shorter-term severe ketosis can also create a lot of fatty acids in the tissues that interfere with regular cellular respiration. And those can accumulate in the tissues as well. Like someone if they're eating like a bunch of fish oils or avocado or these polyunsaturated fats, which are very much abundant in a lot of people's ketogenic diets, those can accumulate in the tissues and impair the cell's ability to make energy over the long haul. So that too can contribute to a weaker immune system, and then you can develop sort of symptoms of candida as well as a bunch of other issues.
Right. If you're a health, fitness, or nutrition professional, check out our other podcast, Six Figure Health Pro. We dig into the latest marketing techniques and business growing strategies for health professionals. To learn how to take your business to the next level, search for Six Figure Health Pro on iTunes or Stitcher, or go to sixfigurehealthpro.com to learn more. Now do what you're told. All right, so let's get back into taking care of the actual candida overgrowth, and let's get into some of the antimicrobials that can be beneficial. But it's important that when you are working to improve a confirmed candida overgrowth, that you look at it like a two-phase process. And the first phase is reducing the overgrowth, but then the second phase is rebuilding your gut. And that's the biggest mistake that a lot of people don't make, is they have some success wiping out this candida. They start
to
feel better.
They don't make this mistake, or they do make this?
They do make this mistake.
Oh, okay.
Is that they have some success wiping out the candida. Some of the symptoms start to fade. They feel better. So they continue this protocol like forever. And that's going to kind of wipe out all of your beneficial bacteria that you need for a lot of purposes. So you really have to take steps to build that back up. So we'll cover that in a second, Will. Don't let me forget. But let's talk about some of the antimicrobials that can be useful when we look at wiping out candida. I know one that I like to use is a grapefruit seed extract. And I usually have someone mix this with other things too, but I kind of use this as a baseline because it's super effective. But it seems to have a bit of a pro-catabolic effect for some people. And in part one of this episode, we talked about how bacteria and fungal infections seem to thrive with people that are overly catabolic. So if someone uses this, they might want to just use it during the morning or during the day when they should be more catabolic. Another one is cat's claw and pot d'arco. Pot d'arco is that herb that I mentioned adding to coconut yummies in the recipe that I put in the book, just because it kind of makes it taste a little chocolatey. So why not have your candida wipeout be delicious?
For sure.
Yeah.
And I think it's also important to really call into mind like what you're trying to achieve with these antimicrobials. You're trying to kill off a bacterial overgrowth, and antimicrobials can help play that role. And certain bacteria are more subject to damage from certain antimicrobials, and then other strains are more resistant to that antimicrobial. So a lot of the times we see best results come when people use like multiple different antimicrobials that can help kill off these different germs. So you'll see blends of things like one of our friend colleagues, Dr. Ruscio, will use a product called Primal Defense, which in fighting off SIBO, which means small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, he'll use Primal Defense as well as some other antimicrobials like grapeseed extract to help.
Garlic can be a good one, oregano. Yep. Lauric acid is good, and caprylic acid, which is an MCT from coconut, can be very effective. And Uva ursi is another one that I've never used, but I hear good things about.
Yeah, and then in like the world of just foods also, we know we've seen raw carrot, cooked mushroom, and cooked bamboo can also be kind of a regular part of your diet as an antimicrobial. They're all different antimicrobial agents. So all of that goes to just helping keep your intestinal tract pretty clean and clear. And once you use those, like you, if you're working with like a functional medicine doctor or someone, they can help you see like, okay, we did this round for like 4 weeks or 6 weeks or 12 weeks. Then they'll recheck and see, okay, did you clear that out? And then you can confirm like, when can I move on to the next stage? And that's important to do. So people don't get stuck in this trap of like just doing that for years or the problem of not doing it long enough.
Right. So, and because you don't want to, it's not this let's do blanket bombing kind of thing and just kill everything. We want that symbiotic relationship with all of these critters. So we want to bring it back to good balance. And usually when there's a candida overgrowth, the some of the beneficial bacteria is not high enough to kind of keep it under check because they can compete against each other. And so once you've done enough of the wiping out, you really have to implement some building things back up. And Will, should we talk a little bit about using probiotics is not necessarily something that you do forever. It's kind of like a phase.
So yeah, using the analogy of a river, before you start just pouring like probiotics back into the system, you want to make sure that system is going to be supportive of the kind of life that you want to have inside your intestinal tract. So this analogy of a river, if you think of like you've got this like little, maybe a stream, you've got a stream and it's got this nice little ecosystem where there's some like freshwater fish and little birds that come, little like whatever, guppies swimming around. And then
I like guppies.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
And then you put in a dam and the water becomes stagnant.
Damn.
And the whole, yeah, that was not a cuss word. That was a functional noun.
Okay. Oh, we can say dam?
Yeah.
When we're talking about,
we're talking about a dam.
Okay.
A great big dam. And it changes the ecosystem. And, you know, depending on what kind of bugs and animals you like, it's maybe a good or a bad thing. But if you look at someone's digestive system that's flowing well, like they have good, strong stomach acid, so their food gets sterilized and then moves out of the stomach into the intestinal tract quickly, and then bile squirts on it like a nice little factory line, emulsifies the fats, neutralizes the pH, and then it moves swimmingly through the intestinal tract, and you have like a couple good bowel movements a day. Like, that's awesome. And
then
that's exactly what you want. And then with that, it will support the kind of intestinal flora that's healthy, like the aerobic kind. But then if you start to get stagnation occur, like say you don't have enough stomach acid, so food kind of sits in your stomach and ferments and doesn't get sterilized or broken down all the way, and then it goes in the intestinal tract, like it's going to be much slower, more putrid situation, and different microorganisms are going to go crazy gangbusters like wild in that region. So you really need to correct the internal environment of digestion and make sure that food is being properly chemically doused with stomach acid and bile and moving through the system in a timely manner, so that when you do add probiotics, they have a good, healthy environment to be in. Otherwise, you can pour in like various strains of bacteria and they will actually morph into other harmful strains. And they can end up creating the same or similar bacterial overgrowth issue. Even though you bought these really expensive probiotics, they'll morph to the internal environment. And there's many strains that will just like our cells, they will morph, they will adapt their metabolism to the kind of food that's around. So they can end up creating a bunch of exotoxins that you don't want. Even if it was like supposedly desirable strain, they can end up creating more exotoxins if the internal environment is one that leads them in that direction.
Yeah, one interesting thing too that Will was just pointing out is that you have to have enough acidity in your stomach to help everything to work correctly. They've done a lot of studies on a lot of these antimicrobials that we just listed that indicated that they worked better when there was a more acidic environment. Like if they added HCl to this use of the antimicrobial, or they used some enzymes that could help break down things better. So that's why improving digestion, like we teach in our 4-week course, is so crucial before you start to try and wipe out all of these, any type of candida overgrowth, because you need that acidification to make the environment right, to not only help wipe them out, but you want the environment to be right when you go to the rebuilding the gut phase. And when they're in that phase, Will, there's some specific probiotics that you like to use?
Yeah, and they really boil down to their end products, meaning like what they make. And they'll tend to make different types of lactic acid, which, and they'll do other things too, that like the whole eubiome. This is multi-million dollar research project where they're trying to do like the, just like they did the human genetic biome, they're trying to do that for the intestinal flora. So there's a whole lot of research that's going into like what the various like things that intestinal flora produce and how that impacts our body. But one of the main things that helps us distinguish if intestinal flora is a good strain or a bad strain is the kind of lactic acid that it makes. And not all lactic acids are created equal. Right. There's R lactic acid, which is like a it has to do with the shape of the molecule of the lactic acid itself. So R lactic acid is a normal, healthy part of the regular Krebs cycle, or the cellular energy production cycle.
And you're saying
cycle.
R as in Ralph, not our. Just wanted to clarify.
Correct.
That.
Not our, not like our brand of like, no, it's R, like R as in Robert. It's just the, it denotes the molecular shape or spin of the type of lactic acid that is functional. It's a normal part of the Krebs cycle or the energy production cycle of cells. Like anytime you flex a muscle.
And you're saying Krebs cycle, not crab cycle, right?
Right.
Correct.
Okay. I'm glad we're having to correct. No, we're having to just clarify for Will a lot today. I'm sorry.
Because we're perfectionists.
Yeah, good.
Maybe I'm just blowing through words. I'll enunciate better. I'll pretend. You know, it might help if I pretend I have a British accent.
That is
no, there
very
you go.
Helpful.
There you go.
So R lactic acid, Krebs cycle, it's recycled. It's normally, it's just there. It doesn't clog the system. It works efficiently. D lactic acid, which is created by damaged cells, such as the cells of diabetics, will end up clogging up the Krebs cycle, and it can impair regular cellular respiration. Certain forms of intestinal flora also create D-lactic acid, and that can create the same problems that we see diabetics run into when they when their cells are clogged and filled with D-lactic acid. It impairs regular mitochondrial respiration. So including more of those kind of intestinal flora that are contributing to D-lactic acid in the system is problematic, and it can cause all sorts of issues. Beyond just candida, but like just impairing cell metabolism and immune function in general.
And you had a brand that you liked to use a lot.
Oh, yeah. So we put L. salivarius in our complete protein, but there's also a brand called Panexia, P-A-N-E-A-X-A, I believe, that has a probiotic product called Pro-B.
The accent makes you even hotter, Will.
Good job.
Thanks.
So we got to wrap this up here, but I want to talk quickly about with some people have an issue where they can't wipe out the candida. It can be due to a biofilm that the fungus has created, and bacteria can create these too. If you want to learn more about this, go to kickitnaturally.com and search for Dr. Ruscio, R-U-S-C-I-O, and find our episode with Dr. Ruscio where he talks about biofilms. It's basically a situation where they create like this film around a colony of bacteria or fungus or candida, and it kind of protects them from any type of antimicrobial or from your immune system attacking so that they can live happily. So in order to wipe them out, you really have to take steps to kind of break down that biofilm by using agents like Cemento or lumbrokinase. And in that episode, Dr. Russo talks a lot about that. So you could learn about that if you end up having kind of a resistant Candida overgrowth.
You know what I'm seeing? I'm seeing a whole like cartoon in my head, like a Marvel cartoon, and Candida is the bad guy, and then like the superhero is fighting him, but he puts up his little film.
That's what he did.
Yeah,
that's what he
there
did.
You go. All right, so if you'd like to learn how to become a health coach or even just dig or dive into more advanced teachings for yourself or your family, go to healthprocourse.com to learn about Tony and Will's course for coaches. Registration for this course only opens to the public for about a week at a time, so be sure to register for the coach newsletter so you'll be notified when the next registration opens. You'll find more info at healthprocourse.com. Also, if you haven't liked us yet on Facebook, go to Kick It in the Nuts. That's where we post all of our show topics we'll be doing. You guys can ask questions. You can even pitch a show you want us to do if you haven't heard, if we haven't done it yet. And we'll try to accommodate you.
All right, let's hit that last question from Jackie, and we got to wrap this
Jackie.
Up.
Jackie from Sumter, South Carolina. I have a toe fungus that I had gotten rid of years ago. It is back. I am treating it with Melaleuca oil, which is a type of tea tree oil, but would like to never have to take it again.
Yeah, with an infection like that, there are a lot of topical oils that can kind of help wipe it out quickly, but you have to kind of wonder, is my body set up where these fungus or a candida or some other type of microorganism is thriving, which is allowing these infections to come back frequently?
Or like Will was saying, maybe you stop some treatment too soon and then it comes back. Like if you stop an antibiotic too soon, it doesn't completely clear it out.
Right. Well, the same way with the rebuilding phase that a lot of people skip. They just do the wiping out and they don't do the rebuilding phase that allows the body to move back and stay in a balanced state. So they continually are doing this, wipe it out, and then it slowly comes back, and then wipe it out, and then it slowly comes back. And another thing is they may need to look at some imbalances where maybe it's thriving in a specific imbalance, right, Will?
Yeah, there's any number of different of the body chemistry imbalances that we talk about, like an electrolyte deficiency or the catabolic problem or even an issue with the metabolism being a slower oxidizer. All those things could contribute to the immune system being weaker or the digestion not functioning properly, creating a more stagnant environment. So all those things looked at together can make a really great can help you formulate a really great action plan about what you need to do to optimize your system overall, and which is really where we like to lead people's mind and when they're dealing with an issue like this is to, use some powerful tools like antimicrobials to zap them out, but also optimize the environment, like make sure your digestion's on point and your overall body chemistry is as balanced as possible to support your immune system.
Yeah, so I think that show was really great, but I think we might be able to do it a little bit better. Let's just do it one more time.
One more time?
Yeah, just to perfection it up.
Nice.
Sounds good.
You know, the body is a very complicated thing. It is very complicated.
So maybe we'll just keep this show as it is.
Yeah.
All right, we'll see you next week then, I guess.
All right, well, today all of our listeners can get a free audiobook from audible.com. Just go to kickitinthenuts.com/audiobook for the details. So you could actually get Tony's book for free, Kick It in the Nuts.
Kick Your Fat in the Nuts.
Yeah, Kick Your Fat in the Nuts. And, you know, I'm sure he talks about a lot of this in there. It's been a while since I've read it, but...
Well, we'll have you listen to it before next week then.
No. All right. And if you want to learn more about how to look at your own chemistry, you can read any of Tony's books or take the almost free...
50 cents.
4-week digestion course at Kick It in... kickitnaturally.com. That would really be helpful if you want
to
do that.
You can go to Will's page, too, and check out stuff there.
Yeah, you can go to Will's page, mybodyofknowledge.net, and you can check out his exercises, his articles, his blogs, his pictures. He's half-clothed, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Cool. All right, we'll see you next week, guys.
All right.